Okay.
For the record, Marty Johnson. I'd like to thank my technical advisor, Austin, who's going to help us get this on there. The goal of this presentation today is to give the commissioners an overview of the entire proposal, of what the various companies that Pat mentioned have asked the county to do. And so what we would do is like to go through this presentation, answer questions as they come up. And again, as Pat mentioned, Jeremy and Kendra will help out with various parts of this. So again, to start, so to start the proposed project, and Jeremy will fill in some of the project details after I run through this summary, but the developer, and we're using that term to basically cover Switch, Tesla, Google, Reno Land, blockchains in Emerald Cities, they have proposed to have an off-site pipeline, treated effluent pipeline, that will come from Reno Sparks out to the industrial park, funded with the proceeds of special assessment district bonds. So those will be repaid by assessments on that property, and we'll go through special assessments here in just a second. The on-site distribution and improvement facilities for treatment, if necessary, those will all be privately financed by those parties. So they're only asking the county to participate in the financing of the off-site. They are also requesting the county to form a tax increment area for the sole purpose of reimbursing the property owners for the assessments that they pay. So this is not like the proposal that was going on a year ago where the tax increment area was actually paying the bonds. In this case, the bonds are going to be done via special assessment district. So I'll have Jeremy talk for just a minute about what the actual project is and some of those benefits.
Thank you, Marty, Mr. Chairman, with your permission.
Go right ahead.
Thank you, sir. As Marty indicated, primary purpose of the conversation today is to talk about a 13-mile pipeline to bring effluent water from the Reno Sparks area to the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Park. There are three primary players in this, three primary stakeholders, if you will. One is Washoe County. The second is TRI, the property owners of TRI. And the third is Story County. And so I'd like just to talk about the project itself in the context of the three stakeholders that exist there. That 13-mile pipeline begins at the Tahoe-Reno, Tumwharf, the Truckee Meadows Water Reclamation Facility. As folks probably know, the Truckee River and the Truckee Meadows watershed is a fragile watershed and among the most litigious watersheds in the western United States. It is governed by the Truckee River Operating Agreement. And that operating agreement does a number of things. Not only does it manage the flow of water along the Truckee River, but it also manages the quality of the water. And there are many considerations in that regard. This has been a serious challenge for Northern Nevada because of high level of nitrates going back into the river. What we're talking about here today in this pipeline, with the water that's going in to the front side of this pipeline, is arguably among the most innovative and environmentally responsible approaches to water management that we've seen in the western United States. Why? Because it takes 4,000 acre feet of high nitrate effluent and diverts it away from the Truckee River. It starts with an environmental issue in doing that. And what does that mean for Washoe County? What does that mean for Reno and Sparks? What that means is that that redirecting effluent, that increase in capacity, reduces and delays the need to construct additional water treatment facilities in that region. The cost of those water facilities that are delayed or pushed back, if you will, somewhere between $30 and $40 million for the capital cost to construct them. The cost of operating those facilities, $1.5 million, is saved to the taxpayers as a result of the fact that this 4,000 acre feet is being diverted and not going into the Truckee. Not only that, but in terms of the water that is coming through the pipeline, the effluent that is coming through the pipeline is also replaced with water rights in a similar amount, their Truckee Water River, that will allow economic development and stability in the Reno-Sparks area. TRI is contributing 1,500 acre feet, and NDOT will develop between 1,500 and 2,500 acre feet to essentially offset the totality of those 4,000 acres. Again, from Washoe County's perspective, from Reno-Sparks perspective, it is both an economic development activity, but probably more important, an environmental opportunity. Once that water that starts at that water reclamation facility makes its way 13 miles through that pipeline, it ends up at TRI. That is 4,000 acre feet of treated effluent that has things like nitrates in it. What is important about this water, why it is particularly germane to our conversation today, is that is reliable and stable water. It is water that will be there for a very, very long time because of its reliability. However, the water that comes through that pipeline doesn't do anything else but stop at that point. We're talking about it today in the 13-mile pipeline, and the EDFP, or the Economic Development Financing Proposal, is just the pipeline. That water ends up, starts at Reno-Sparks, ends up at TRI, and comes out of that pipeline. But that's not where the investment ends. Phase one of the investment is the storage and transmission at roughly $30 million. Phase two is extensive and additional water treatment that is necessary to utilize that water for its ultimate end purpose. In total, that's an additional $65 million to $115 million of additional incremental investment, taking the total amount of the project that we're talking about here today to $100 million to roughly $150 million in total. Those are all costs that are borne by the private sector. If we think about those in terms of that infrastructure that needs to be built, what Marty started the conversation about is what is referred to as the off-site effluent pipeline infrastructure. What I just referred to is the on-site infrastructure. And as Mr. Witten mentioned, this is a partnership between both sides, making sure that the totality of the project can get done. We talked about the benefits to the Reno-Sparks area. What about the benefits to TRI and the property owners that are there? I think it is important to note that Switch and Tesla and Google and blockchains, Reno Land, as well as Emerald City Empire, we're talking about an area of land that is roughly 4,000 acres in size. These companies don't do anything small. They are ambitious, some of the most technologically advanced manufacturing and data centers and investments in the entire world exist there. The total cost of that infrastructure that is necessary for them to achieve their goals is somewhere between $100 and $150 million. And as we mentioned before, part of this reduces the ultimate cost to that by roughly $35 million as the tax increment area reimburses them for the amount that they pay for that infrastructure. I do want to mention that that reimbursement comes out of taxes that they would otherwise pay. So essentially, the reimbursement that they have the opportunity to get should the development actually materialize as planned, a portion of the taxes that would be generated from land that is today vacant would be used to offset the cost that they will pay for that infrastructure. What does that mean? It means that there will be increases in the utility of that property. It means that that will allow for more intensive uses of the property. It does mean that that property will become more valuable because the access to that water is the difference between developing lower intensity uses, like a distribution center, for example, and higher intensity uses, like advanced manufacturing or data centers. That is why this project works. Now, that's why it works for Reno and Sparks. That's why it works for TRI. The third stakeholder that we mentioned is Story County. What is it that Story County, what is it that the people of Story County get as well? The answer is somewhere between $100 and $150 million of water, wastewater infrastructure, including all of the components that we talked about previously, a lower cost of delivering that infrastructure, and I'll talk about that in a moment. And I think it's important to note that that infrastructure is actually owned by the TRI GID. It's actually a public entity that will own that infrastructure. What's the value of having that infrastructure in Story County? Supporting economic investment, as I mentioned before, of some of the most technologically advanced jobs. Some of the companies that are developing technologies that will lead to jobs of the future, as well as substantial investments measured in the billions. We're talking about billions of dollars of capital investment. We're talking about thousands of jobs. We're talking about revenue-generating opportunities from a public standpoint, as well as increased property values. Story County also has the opportunity to leverage statutes that allow the county to retain tax dollars that would otherwise go to other governments, including the state, for purposes outside. So the infrastructure that is built is actually utilizes money that would otherwise not be available in Story County. They also do so by issuing bonds, as Marty will talk about here as he goes through his presentation, accompanied by Kendra, that are supported by property assessments for a $35 million bond with an expectation of property values that are supported by that, that essentially protect that investment, that with the project are estimated at roughly $250 million. Mr. Chairman, if we talk about the pipeline, the 13.1 miles, it's easy to just sort of imagine that that's a pipeline. But what the pipeline generates in terms of economic development, what the pipeline does in terms of creating access and ability for long-term growth, what the pipeline does in terms of leveraging statutory provisions that are out there, probably couldn't happen anywhere else in the state of Nevada without the partners that exist here, both in terms of the private sector and the public sector. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I'll turn it back over to Marty, and I'll be here to answer any questions should you have them.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Okay, so moving on with the presentation, we'll talk about assessment districts now because that is the mechanism under which they have proposed to repay these bonds. So assessment districts are allowed under NRS 271. In assessment districts, improvement districts, whether you call them special improvement districts, local improvement districts, they're all the same thing. But as Pat mentioned, we've tried to be consistent with special assessment districts. So assessments are liens on the property. They are co-equal to property taxes. If you don't pay an assessment, your property can be foreclosed on, and Kendra will talk about foreclosure here in a minute. Assessments are billed and collected semi-annually. They are not billed on the tax bills, so there is a separate billing mechanism that is put in place. The county intends to hire a company that does this type of work all over the state for other special assessment districts, and those costs all get paid within the assessment district, and we'll talk about that again in a bit. The interest rate on the assessments is set at 1% higher than the highest rate on the bonds. And so what this means is that, for example, if we borrow the money at 5%, so we have $35 million in bonds at 5%, the assessments will pay interest at 6%. And so that 1% spread helps fund all of those ongoing costs. And again, we'll show you some numbers about that momentarily. Assessments can be levied for a term of 30 years. We'll talk in a minute about the special assessment district guidelines that the county has approved, because also within there, the value of the property with the project being complete, and so we'll refer to that as an as-if value, must be at least 3.5 times the amount that is assessed on that property. And that's to protect the county in the event there is a foreclosure and we have to sell the property. We don't have to get 100 cents on the dollar as it's of its current market value. It would be something less than that. So moving to the proposed bonds. So the bonds would be issued by Story County. There are bonds that will have Story County's name on them. However, in this particular transaction, those bonds are going to be purchased by the state of Nevada. So they will be the sole bondholder. The state will issue their own bonds, and they're going to issue general obligation bonds that are backed by the full faith and credit of the state to purchase the bonds of Story County. And in doing that, they pass through that interest rate. And so the interest rate on these bonds will be about as low as you can get for a Nevada governmental entity. This next part of the slide, this third bullet, is Pat's, as he calls it, the most important part of all of this, because this is where the bonds get paid from. And so first and foremost, they get paid by those assessment payments. The second level of repayment are from other resources available within the special improvement district or special assessment district. Talked about that 1% cushion on the interest rate. And again, I'll show you some numbers here in a second. But interest earnings on a reserve fund, things like that, all of those resources are also available to make the payment. There will be a reserve fund equal to 1 year's debt service that is set aside out of the bond proceeds. So that reserve fund exists on day one that can make the payment in the event there is a delinquency. After that, we do have the uncommitted portion of the county general fund. And in talking to the county comptroller, the estimate of that balance as of the end of the current fiscal year will be approximately $2.8 million. And again, recognize that's not the entire general fund. It is just the uncommitted portion that is at play under this type of a proposal. And then the maximum term under the statutes for these types of bonds is 30 years. The guidelines that the county commission approved had a 20-year limitation. The developers have requested 25 years, and we will be able to talk about that as we move forward in this process. So this flowchart, again, reiterates some of the information I just talked about, but puts it into picture form. And so you can see the special assessment district in the upper left. And so those are the property owners that have agreed to have an assessment on their property. And so they make those assessment payments to you, the issuer of the bond, Story County, and then those monies get transferred to the bond trustee, which is a bank that will be hired to hold those funds and then make that debt service payment to the bondholder, which is the state of Nevada. Now, in addition to those assessment payments, like I mentioned on the prior slide, we also have the other SAD resources. We have the reserve fund. All of those get used before we ever would look at that uncommitted portion of the state's general fund. And again, you can see the reserve fund there in the bottom left with the bond trustee, because they are the ones that hold that. The only way that money can be accessed is to pay delinquencies on, cover delinquencies on the assessment payments that are needed to repay the bonds. So I'm going to turn it over to Kendra here to talk about how foreclosure works for the non-payment of assessments.
Good morning. So this foreclosure slide, as Marty mentioned, special assessment liens have a co-equal status with property taxes. However, in NRS 271, there's a special foreclosure proceeding for special assessment liens that is different than property taxes, even though they maintain the same priority. So this slide describes the NRS 271 procedure. For purposes of this slide, we've assumed a June 1 payment date on assessments. The payment dates will be semi-annually, but for illustration purposes here, on a particular payment date, we'll look at June 1. 60 days prior to June 1, there'll be a notice sent to property owners that their payment is due on June 1. If they don't make that by June 1, a delinquent notice will be sent by June the 5th. Within 60 days of June 1, the County Commission will adopt a foreclosure resolution foreclosing on delinquent properties, and a second delinquent notice sent July 1, a third delinquent notice sent August 1, at which point the lot books are prepared, and that's just the information for the foreclosure proceeding that identifies all of the lien holders on the property. The notice of sale is mailed the first week of September, with the foreclosure sale happening in September. And at that point, there's an auction in the foreclosure process for the property. Again, property taxes and assessments are co-equal. If that is the amount of the bid at auction, then the property will be sold, and the winning bidder will get a certificate. There will then be a process where the certificate holder is holding the certificate on the property, and the property owner has an ability to redeem that certificate, but at that point the county is out because the county has been paid its property taxes in the assessment lien. In this process, the county will direct that not just the delinquent assessment, but the total assessment that is on the property will be foreclosed, so that you're not going through semi-annual foreclosure proceedings for each installment. They just foreclose on the totality of the assessment. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Marty.
Thanks. And one more point on the foreclosure information. If you remember, on the previous two slides, we talked about a reserve fund. That's there to cover 1 year's worth of debt service. And so that would be able to handle, assuming that that reserve fund is full, handle the payments on the bonds until this particular process can be completed. So here is a sample cash flow, and again, I've annualized these numbers so that they fit on a page better. But you can see on the left side the incoming assessment payments. And again, for this example, I've assumed a 6% interest rate on the assessments. So you can see that on $35 million, that creates an annual payment of just over $3 million. The bonds that we would be issuing if this goes forward and sold to the state of Nevada, in this example, have a 5% interest rate on them. And you can see the payments on those bonds is just over $2.8 million. So on an annual basis, there's about $240,000 of net cash flow. That's the money that I was referring to as the other SAD resources. That's the money that will go to pay the bank trustee. That will go towards paying the company to do the management and billing and collection of the assessments. It will go to pay the assessment engineer for parcel splits or combinations as those might occur going forward. The idea being that that money is going to cover those costs so that the county does not pay any of those costs out of their own pocket. In fact, that money can also be used to reimburse county staff for time spent on the assessment district. But again, funds not used for that can be used to help make the payments on the bonds. And again, in addition to this, there are interest earnings on the reserve fund. There's interest earnings on the assessments, because those assessments come in generally 2 months before the bond payments get made. So in Kendra's example, where the assessment payment date might be June 1st, the bond payment date would be August 1st. So that gives us time. You know, if a check's late or something like that, we're not at risk having to draw on the reserve fund, you know, every single payment date. We've got time to get some things worked out. And, you know, in that example, theoretically, the foreclosure could happen within 2 months of the actual bond payment date, if that process all runs as it should. So now let's talk about the tax increment area for a moment. Recognize again that this does not have anything to do with the issuance of the bonds in terms of a security piece in the bond issue. Under the prior proposal, the tax increment area was where the bonds were going to be paid from. In this case, the tax increment area, the developers are asking the county to form that solely to reimburse them at whatever point in time there are incremental revenues for the assessments that they have paid. So this revenue does not go to repay the bonds. The current revenues stay in place, although all of the parcels that are in the tax increment area are vacant. So really the only revenues right now are property tax revenues coming in on those parcels. But the revenues that are part of the tax increment area, the real and personal property taxes, the modified business taxes, and sales tax revenue. And again, that is separate from the bond, but it is a package in terms of what the developer is requesting from the county.
Now that's being separate from the property taxes as well?
The tax, if I'm understanding your question, Commissioner, the property taxes, some property taxes would be incremental property tax. So once the boundaries are formed and the revenues are set as what we call the base year for a tax increment area, property tax revenues over and above that amount would be part of that tax increment area. But the tax rate levied for school operation and for any voter-approved debt or tax overrides, which the school district's capital rate is, and 2 cents of the state's debt rate, those are not subject to being diverted to the tax increment area. Those are protected. So if the commission decides to move forward today, and I guess before I go through all of these, let me talk about that just for a minute. What you have on the agenda that follows this particular item is, and within this item, is the approval of the EDFP, but also notification to GOED and to the Interim Finance Committee of this project. They have to meet and approve for purposes of forming the TIA. That is the only thing that we are absolutely doing today if you approve those agenda items. You are not creating a special assessment district today. You are not creating a tax increment area today. Those things, as you can see from this slide, would happen in the future. So, assuming that you determine to go forward with this project, at your next meeting, August 21st, you would have a resolution in regards to the tax increment area for the provisional order, and that contains information about the plans, the costs, the projected revenues that might be developed within the tax increment area. Then on September 4th, we would have the first reading of the creation ordinance for the assessment district. We would also have the financing agreement between the county and the various participants in the assessment district that discusses how the bond proceeds are used for construction, what the procedures are for them to be reimbursed or paid for construction as that project goes on. All of those types of things are laid out in that financing agreement. And then also an interlocal agreement between the county and the GID regarding the fact that the GID will be the one that owns this infrastructure once this is all wrapped up. So on September 18th would be the second reading of the creation ordinance, and then after a publication that would be effective. And then October 2nd would be the first reading of the creation ordinance for the tax increment area. And assuming that we're to the point where we would be issuing bonds, the first reading of the bond ordinance for the assessment district bonds. And then again on the 16th would be the second reading of both of those. The reason we can't do those at the same time is that we need to have the assessment district created prior to issuing the bonds to help have that separation in dates between when the assessment payments come in and the bond payments get made. And also the process for forming a tax increment area is a bit longer than it is for forming the assessment district. And so that's the reason for the separation there. So that concludes the presentation that we have put together. Again, wanted to make sure that you have all of the facts and understand what the plan of finance is that has been proposed. If you have questions, we'll direct them to the appropriate party.
Thanks, Marty. I'm sure there's going to be several more questions to follow up. I think my first question was going to be for Jeremy Aguero. Is well, with the pipeline of being able to accommodate 4,000 acre feet of water and the water rights are going to be given up by TRI and by NDOT, 15 and 25, giving you your 4,000. Does it have a capability or capacity to handle more than 4,000 acre feet of water?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Jeremy Aguero, the answer to that question is yes, that there is the potential for that. That said, the 4,000 acre feet of water is the amount that we know has been available in terms of the water that could come through the pipeline initially.
Except they need to acquire more water rights if they need more water.
That would be correct, sir.
To the industrial park.
And I just might add that question could have been directed toward our engineer who's back there shaking his head yes, you know, in okay. Confirmation. So he's the one doing the design.
Well, he was the closest one to the microphone.
And I think I got it right. Thank you, sir.
He doesn't have a PE after his name.
Yeah, also true.
Nicole, could you turn the lights back up?
So it's been kind of 4,000 acre feet of water has kind of been the number for a while.
Yes, sir.
Now, as Truckee Meadows grows, is there going to be more water coming through that pipeline?
Well,
and can the pipeline handle that?
Commissioner, I don't want to commit that will happen in the future. I do believe it will happen personally because the first part of your question I think becomes so important. What we know is that the state of Nevada is the second fastest growing population state in the entire United States. What we know is that northern Nevada is growing faster than the balance of the state for any number of reasons. That additional economic activity is going to create increased demand for water resources, and it's going to have that water is going to have to be treated. The reason that I hedge my response is because that's not the only thing that's out there. Right? We also know that conservation measures have gotten increasingly, the region and the state has gotten increasingly aggressive relative to conservation. Technology is developing all the time. And so that could also play into some of this. That having been said, it is absolutely my expectation that as we go forward, that, that this type of what I think is both responsible and innovative way of addressing a water issue to the benefit of an economic development program is something that not only this community but others will try to emulate.
You know, I think the team that's been put together with this has have answered most of the questions I've had in previous meetings. So how about if we open up for public comment and we'll let people come up and they can either make a statement or perhaps if you want to field questions, whoever, Marty, you could direct whatever question sure. maybe the public has to whoever would be best poised to answer the question. So we open for public comment.
Mr. Chairman, Adam Kramer, for the record, Executive Vice President of Strategy for Switch. I want to thank you again for the amount of time that's been given to this project by the county and the county staff. This project is without a doubt the most complicated project I work on in the country and work in a lot of regions. And I think it's a testament to the staff here at Story County and to the vision of yourself and Commissioner McGuffey to help continue to push forward a project that is as innovative and as complex as this, but will continue to promote economic development in the region as well as environmental conservancy in the region with what we are trying to do. On Switch's behalf, what is so important to us about this project is, as Jeremy mentioned, is the water intensity of what is going on at the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, and what that economic impact is the ability to have this additional water, and especially to have this water come from a resource that would otherwise be adding pollutants into the Truckee River, which is the life bed of Northern Nevada, and be able to use that for a mechanical purpose and leave water in the river is something that is extremely important to the conservation and environmental focus of a company like Switch. And I know in a moment, Chris Riley will speak to the same for Tesla, and if Google was able to be here today, they would say the same for themselves as well. And so I want to take a moment again to thank you and to thank the staff, because I think for the people who are getting the brief on this, you have an idea of the complexity of what this entails. But to have the expertise here, I also think speaks volumes to Story County and the future ability for this county to continue to grow and handle this type of economic development on a going forward basis. So I want to thank you and urge pass on our very, very strong support for this project, and thank you again for your time today.
Thanks, Mr. Kramer.
Hello, Chairman, Commissioner. Chris Riley, Workforce Development and Education Partnerships for Tesla. I just wanted to be here and echo Adam's statements as well. We've been, as a qualified project in this initiative, we've been in strong support of the work being done here and the innovation behind providing this solution. We also thought it may be valuable to speak for a moment on what is going on at Gigafactory 1 and share a short update regarding production, construction, transportation, and education out at Gigafactory 1. So some background, construction is continuing. We're currently at 5.4 million square feet of operational space at Gigafactory 1 with thousands of team members on site daily. We are also expanding production. We recently announced we've seen an increase in Model 3 production, and it's important to note that what's being produced at Gigafactory is in addition to our battery business, we're also producing all of our electric motors for Model 3. We're also producing all of our energy storage products, both for home and for corporate. And you know, as we continue to see this growth, we're continuing to bring on thousands of full-time team members here. in the community. And with that, we're also making sure that we want to be part of key infrastructure conversations. And one specific has been the transportation out to the center. And we've recently increased our shuttle infrastructure for free employee shuttles from the region. From about 150 people today to over 1,600 daily employees riding out there to help with traffic. We're also partnering with RTC around a very exciting van pool program. And we have about 70 van pools in the area serving over 400 Nevadans out there as well. So we see, you know, increasing the options for transportation key to the long-term sustainability of our center out there. And the last update around something very important to us is the education. And as part of Tesla's 2004 commitment to Nevada and starting the Gigafactory, we had shared a $37.5 million investment into K-12 education in Nevada. And that would be starting in July of 2018. And I'm excited to share that we presented at the State Board of Education on July 19th our first $1.5 million of investment, and we've been very active in discussing with Superintendent Todd Hess on great opportunities for Story County and innovative ways to invest this money into our community. We've also been building an apprenticeship program for high school graduates to start entry-level careers at Gigafactory. And become a part of this long term. This is something we're expanding all across the state. And so again, we just wanted to say thank you so much and to be here in support of everything going on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Riley.
Good morning, Commissioner. Joel Grace with Reno Land, Vice President of Development. When we were first brought this project to kind of understand as a whole what this was going to do for the park, we had just entered into contract on the property that we now own out there. And as a developer, not really understanding what we were going to do, but understanding the pipeline and what it does for the park as a whole and the attraction of economic development was really where we got on board. So we were kind of blind going into the process, not knowing with exactly what we were going to be doing, having a general understanding as developers in the industrial realm, knowing what we wanted to do. But this water kind of added a whole new element to the fact of the type of quality companies that we can attract and what it will do for Story County as a whole. So that is why we support this project, and we hope you consider it.
Joel, I think it's important. A name, corporate name like Reno Land is not as sexy or as attention-getting perhaps as Tesla or Switch, but could you talk about the developers of the project so we have a scope and an understanding outside
sure.
of Trick what Mr. Bowlby's done?
Sure. So our capital partners and our partnership here locally is made up of seasoned developers who have done development in Idaho, California, and Nevada, and now continuing kind of east. But we currently have, for projects under roof right now, we have the 141 acres, the Ranchera Estate that we bought that we are currently developing. We have a 49-acre site in the heart of Reno where Park Lane Mall used to be located. So we are currently in process and about to go vertical here in September on that project as well. We have some holdings in Boomtown that we're working on, and then we have a workforce housing project that we're doing with the call an 80-20 deal with the state that we had done through a bond issuance down on Mount Rose Highway that has workforce housing as well as market rate apartments. So very seasoned.
Thank you.
Chairman, Commissioners, thank you for inviting me here today. I started in this project.
Let me just interrupt you for 1 second. Randy, if you go ahead and identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Randall Alleman. I'm with Emerald Lake Town Center. We're developing the town center around the proposed 75-acre lake to be built out at TRI. So in the early 2000s, I came out here to Northern Nevada, and I met Lance Gilman. And I bought into his whole project and his whole idea of watching and developing this property to what it is today. So for me, it's an honor to be a part of this project and to be included in a meeting like this with the likes of Tesla, Switch, Google, Blockchains, and Reno Land Company. These guys are all great developers. We are a smaller group of people. As you guys are aware, these projects are very front-end loaded. And we, to date, have approximately $17.6 million invested into this project, cash. This bond that we're asking for represents less than 10% of the total money that we have invested. So for me, this seems to be very little risk for the county. And I think it really helps us as smaller developers to develop our properties and to take advantage of tools that are available within the state of Nevada for us to use those tools to help us to get where we need to go. Our project is a retail project, and I think that our project is the missing part of Story County. Our goal is to be the largest sales tax revenue generator in TRI at completion. So I believe that we will, by bringing in hotels and motels and hospitalities companies, and to bring in charter schools, restaurants, bars, all the things that this town center is missing. As I drive out there, we don't even have a coffee shop where people can go and meet. I had a meeting with Rick Anderson from Walmart. When I sat down with Rick Anderson, he explained to me, he said, we right now have to set aside 2.5 hours for an off-campus meeting. He said 45 minutes to get to a restaurant, 45 minutes to get home, and an hour for the meeting. He said a town center and the development of that lake project would be crucial for us to help develop what we need to develop in our long-term vision. So I am honored and excited to be a part of this whole project. I saw the vision in the early 2000s. I bought into the vision. I've been a landowner out in the park since the early 2000s. And like I said, I'm excited to be here and honored to be a part of this. And I appreciate all the help you're giving us as smaller developers. And we just love everything you guys are doing. Appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hillman. Questions for these gentlemen? Mr. Toll?
For the record, Sam Toll, Gold Hill. Jeremy, just before I get started, I saw that your company, Applied Analytics, is what it, Analysis, thank you, is actually running the Las Vegas Stadium Authority. How's the stadium going down there?
$350 million in the grant.
Great. So on track to get that stadium built? Yes. Super. Thank you. So there's a number of questions that have been kicking around my mind since I've read the packet as released. One of the sort of fundamental questions, well, there's two of them. One is in relation to the GID itself. It's been discussed that the pipeline, that the storage facility, that the water treatment facility, roughly cost $150 million, will become the property of the GID. Is that an accurate assessment of what I heard?
Yes, sir. Yes.
So the people who are buying, the investors, the folks who are being assessed, their property tax and then ultimately being repaid by the TIA, will then turn over all of that, what that money has purchased, to the GID.
That's correct.
Okay, all right. So and first off, before I continue, I'm a strong proponent of this idea. I think that it is essential to continue the growth that we've enjoyed so far, and that it makes an awful lot of sense for the folks out there. I know that I've done some analysis of the water wells that the United States government monitors, and I know that water levels are dropping out there, with the exception of the one well next to storage area that the GID maintains, suggesting that there may be a leak out there. Regardless, the water is essential to drive the necessary engines of technology and growth that will propel Northern Nevada forward in the coming years. So I think it's a great idea. And this idea started in 2013, is that right? Is it, you guys have been working on it that long?
It's been a long time. I don't know the exact start date.
Okay. It's been a long time. So it's been a lot of work. I know that I've watched a number of meetings in Reno where council from Switch has explained the iterations and got them to commit their water. So obviously a lot of work has gone into this, and there's a lot at stake here. I have a question regarding the reason, I'm asking why, Story County is going to issue the bonds and then sell them to the state of Nevada. Why would the state of Nevada simply not issue those bonds themselves?
Otherwise the staff won't be able to pick up the,
okay.
The recording.
Kendra Follett from Sherman and Howard, and we're bond counsel. So it's just an option under the statute from SB 1 that you, if the county approves the EDFP, the Economic Development Financing Plan, then the state of Nevada has the ability to issue general obligation bonds. And as Marty explained, the general obligation bonds of the state of Nevada carry a very low interest rate, and then that affords that same, you know, financing to the project.
Forgive me, but you're suggesting it's an option, but the real question is why would we simply not enjoy the low interest rates from the state of Nevada and not encumber or include Story County in that transaction?
I think his question is, why can't the state issue these bonds on their own without the county involvement? And the answer is, the statute requires us to issue bonds.
Yes.
Sorry. Let me get up to the microphone. This is Marty Johnson, for the record. If I understand the question correctly, it's why isn't the state just issuing these bonds and leaving the county out of this? And the answer to that is that that's not the way the law was written. The county issues a bond and then the state buys it. And actually, there is a bond bank program that's been in existence since 1981 that the state has that finances projects like, or natural resources projects, water and wastewater treatment, all over the state. And this is how it works. Local governments issue the bonds, and then the state buys them and sells their own bonds to do it.
So it's not actually an option. It's actually the only way to, the only mechanism by which to do this.
By which to get the state interest rate, yes.
Okay, very good. All right, so when we talk about the notion that we're going to assess the property holders and foreclose upon their properties if they don't make their payments, and then liquidate the assets, hopefully with a value that would be equivalent to what they owe. We then talk about the creation of a tax in increment area, for which by to reimburse everyone who made those payments from future tax revenue. Okay, so a fundamental question that I have is if the pipeline was not funded by the county, or if the folks who are players had some of their money that falls out of their pocket on the way to the bank pay for it, would the revenue that would be generated by this TIA otherwise flow into the general fund for Story County to enjoy, or is it a tax increment area assessed above and beyond what they're already paying?
For the record, Jeremy Aguero. I want to make sure, I think there were actually multiple questions there, so if I missed something, you can let me know and we'll go back through it. The tax increment area is actually created separate from this, the special assessment district that we talked about. That money, if let's just say for a moment that no revenue becomes available, that nothing is built in that area, there will be no money available to reimburse the private sector developers for the pipeline that was constructed, those special assessments. There will be no money. 100% of the reimbursement risk, of the development risk, if you will, now is borne by all of the private sector developers that are here today. The second part of the question I think that you asked, and I may get this one wrong, so again, please correct me, is what happens if they don't have the funds available to make the special assessment payment at the front end? What happens in the event of that? Would the tax increment area be available, dollars be available to repay to make those bond payments? And the answer is no. Those are wholly separate from one another. The third part of your question is, what about all the revenue that's being generated today? Where does that money go? And the answer to that question, I think Marty alluded to this during his comments, is that this the only taxes that we're talking about that would be available to reimburse the developers for the amount that they've paid for the pipeline would be new money. It would have to be higher than what is generated today. So from the property we're talking about, every dime of property tax must be that is collected before this tax increment area is created has to be redistributed to the school district and the state and the county, so forth and so on, that it was previously. Any new value would then be distributed separately under the tax increment area. And again, not to go on and on and on, but I do think there's one nuance that is important. I think it underlies your question. And that is the way that the tax increment area is created, that there is portions of the tax still go to the taxing entities. Not all of the money is available to reimburse the developer for the cost that they've incurred. For example, under the property tax, the statute specifically carves out both the operating rate and the capital rate of school districts, for example. So as soon as that value is created, that money will be there. In terms of the sales tax, the statute specifically says that only 50% of the sales tax is available to be part of the tax increment area. And in terms of the payroll tax, or we refer to that as the modified business tax, the statute also says that only 50% of that will be available. So as development begins, both the public sector and all of those entities will share in the benefit, and the private sector will get a portion of that in order to repay up to the amount that they've invested in the pipeline. If you have other questions,
I do. Yeah. So basically, the real meat of my question was that under the scenario we're talking about here, the TIA, the tax increment area, will assess taxes and collect taxes on future revenues, and that those, presumably based upon the projections that we heard here of the value of the investment, right now it's bare land, but once buildings pop up, then that assessed value will increase. Once personal property is purchased and installed, the personal property tax base will increase. My question to you is this. If the companies, I think Switch is a privately held company. I don't know what their annual sales are. I know Google is in the hundreds of billions of dollars. I know that Tesla, with their stock at about 360 today, is well north of $50 billion in market cap. Should those folks decide, again, to find a little extra change in their couches or in their conference room to pay for this, and instead of encumbering Story County being on the hook for the $30 million, if they had paid for it by themselves with their own money, would the future taxes generated go into the county funds?
Okay, sure. I think I get the question. The premise of the question, I want to make sure that I make sure that we're thinking about the same thing, and that is Story County is not on the hook here, right? There's a portion called the uncommitted ending fund balance that Story County could potentially be on the hook for, but in order for that to happen, the property value would have to drop by 60, 70, 80%, probably more than that. I'm not doing that calculation very well. The reserve funds would have to be fully exhausted, and the foreclosure would have to take place and not be sufficient in order to offset all those costs. All those things would have to happen. If what you're asking me the question is, in the event that the process that we're talking about here did not happen, would the same amount, would more revenue make it to all of the local governments and state government, for example? And I actually think that's not the case. And I think it's not the case for two reasons. Number one, I think that the intensity of development in terms of what's going to be developed will be greater. That will mean more property taxes, more sales taxes, more modified business taxes or payroll taxes. I think it's important to think about the magnitude of what's being developed. I realize that some of the folks that are developing it came up, and they probably don't want to talk about as much of the details or sort of toot their own horn, but when you're talking about Switch, you're talking about over 7 million square feet of data center space. When you're talking about what is the largest building on planet Earth when you talk about what Tesla is constructing. But at the end of the day, the plans that they have, both that have been announced today and the ones that are moving forward, are predicated on having sufficient water resources. If those water resources aren't there, what we get is lower intensity uses and a longer period before those lower intensity uses are developed. And therefore, not only would it be more difficult to develop the project, although it certainly could happen, but I believe that the amount of property taxes, sales taxes, and other taxes would actually be less as a result.
Please.
Yeah. And this is Marty Johnson for the record. I just want to clarify one of the things about how much the county is on the hook for. The amount of the bonds will indeed be $35 million. That's what the state bonding capacity has. Story County's liability, to use that term, is whatever the annual payment is up to the amount that is in the uncommitted fund balance. So let's just run through a hypothetical that 5 years from now, for whatever reason, none of the other money is sufficient to pay the bonds, and we use whatever is the uncommitted fund balance at that point in time. If the following year that uncommitted fund balance is zero, county doesn't have to pay. And the state of Nevada will pay the bondholders out of their general fund. So the county's liability, while there is some, is limited to the amount of the uncommitted fund balance in the particular year that there is a deficiency in the bond payments. So I just want to make sure that was clear.
Okay. Perhaps I should have not made my question so complicated and simply cut right to the chase. The tax increment abatement area, which will be used to repay the stakeholders for their investment or for the, making the payments, is Story County taxpayer money. That's our money, not. Am I wrong?
No, and so let me. And again, Jeremy works for the developers, and they are the proponents of the project. I work for the county. My job is just to make sure that you guys have all the information. So in a theoretical sense, whatever tax increment revenues that are generated under property tax go to the various governments that levy the property tax. And so, yes, there would be money that would come to the county. Modified business tax goes to the state. Sales tax goes all kinds of places, including some local taxes that stay just here in Story County. So that is the simple answer to your question. I think if I'm going to interpret what Jeremy said, what he's saying is that a low use would maybe generate a dollar in property tax revenue. Whereas with this project, we can, or that property can be developed to a higher use that may generate $2 in property tax revenue. So while you are correct that whatever those increment revenues are, if they weren't being diverted to go to repay those folks, would go to the various local governments and to the state, I think what Jeremy was saying is that because of the project, those property tax and other revenues may be more money than they would have been. And so it could be that the county ends up with the same amount either way. But that's something that they would have to run through their proposals. But in concept, you are correct that that money would otherwise come to the governments.
And then, Sam, before you go on,
please.
You know, you mentioned, well, this will be Story County taxpayer money, and that is a correct statement, but it is a restricted Story County taxpayer money. It is not mine, it is not yours, it is the five or six companies, six now, that would be making the capital investments in their properties, and then it would be a portion of those funds that would arise from the incremental growth on those properties that would go to paying back for their self-imposed special assessments.
Understood, and thank you for pointing that out. I think the point that I would like to drive home to the folks is that, you know, I operated a business for 25 years. I made similar decisions in much smaller scope, but I do remember, you know, mulling over in the mid-90s financing a $500,000 piece of equipment and trying to decide whether or not that was a smart move. Obviously, I did it with my own bootstraps, and I didn't need to encumber anyone other than my clients. But the point that I'm trying to make is that these are some players. These folks are global in scope, and $30 million, again, as I've alluded to, is peanuts to these folks. Investing in this essential and critical element to power and drive the growth of their businesses is a pretty much a no-brainer. It needs to happen. I think we all agree with that, and it will be beneficial to everyone. To your point, if that investment is made and those properties rise in value and we get an increased tax benefit from that, had they made that investment on their own, we would doubly benefit from that. All those additional revenues would increase the money that Todd Hess gets to spend on our children in the Story County School District. For as an example, I mean, just you know, just this last year, we heard about a gentleman from Switch indicated that he's spending, he's committed, he's required to spend $37.5 million. He has spent $1.5 million, or committed to spending that in Nevada schools. He gave Washoe County $50,000. He gave Clark County $50,000. Story County sadly enjoyed none of that. Yet last year, in terms of abated sales tax, Story County's school district was I don't know what the right word is, failed to collect $38 million for just last year. So you know, we're talking about an impact on the county that is dramatic and is tremendous. And so by basically saying you have to pay for it, but the taxpayers through this tax TIA, tax increment area, are going to pay you back, basically says, hey, the taxpayers of Story County are actually financing and buying and paying for your revenue-generating piece of infrastructure.
Okay, Sam, we need to get to questions and answers, okay?
Okay, so my question is, if they had spent their own money to invest on their own infrastructure, which actually they're going to give to the GID, then why do we have to reimburse them? That's the question.
Well, they can answer yourself. I think there's tax reasons behind this. It's a tax advantage for the companies themselves to do this. Plus, it doesn't tie up their capital, you know, for the whole time that building out this project.
Okay, so and I guess.
But let's get to answer questions and answers, because instead of just, you know, summarizing everything here, we have other people who want to talk, and we want to move on with the agenda.
Okay, well, thank you. I think that this adds clarity that was missing from the presentation. The second thing I'd like to talk about today is the GID itself. In order to, the GID is governed by five elected seats, two of which are vacant. Unfortunately, Mr. Gilman is not here today. I had several questions for him regarding this. But in the district where the GID is comprised, there are approximately, well, there are 10 registered voters. And on Google Earth, I looked to see how many people actually live out there, and I can't see more than 15 people that physically reside in the GID's area. The three people that make up the board are all employees of Mr. Gilman. And therefore, every decision that they make represents a direct impact on the pecuniary interests of Mr. Gilman. Mr. Gilman, of course, you know, TRI as we know it, has sold the last of their land to blockchains. Yet, as we know through press releases, Mr. Gilman and Mr. Chris Thompson, who is on the board of the GID, are both now employees of blockchains and represent them as government affairs as well as real estate developers. I spent this last week probably an hour and a half on the phone with Congressman Jim Settlemyer and with
Senator Settlemyer.
Senator, thank you. I put him in Washington, D.C. already. folks within the Secretary of State's office and the District Attorney in Douglas County. Mr. Settlemyer introduced and passed legislation last year to dissolve a GID which had the exact same problem that we have at the TRI GID, which is nobody who lives in the county can actually be elected to the board of directors of the GID, and therefore it was determined by the district attorney's office and by Mr. Settlemyer that it was an illegitimate GID.
Okay, now, Sam, I'm going to have to stop you because we are way off track. Now we're talking about the GID, an illegitimate GID in Douglas County. We need to stay on point for this pipeline that we're talking about right now, Story County.
I'm going to make my point, and I'm going to make that connection very clear in a moment.
I know you want to make your point, but the thing is, you're going into this big, long dissertation. You know, we've given you a platform up there for you to go ahead and grandstand. I need you to wrap it up.
Thank you.
Question and answer.
Okay, so in earlier commission meetings, Mr. Loomis had advised everyone that Story County is responsible financially for the GID. Should a meteor strike the TRI, heaven forbid, then the taxpayers of Story County would be on the hook for everything that they own. Now, that includes the maintenance of the pipeline and all of their infrastructure. It includes repaying any of the notes, and it includes maintaining what they've got. So I think there's a direct impact, and a very important point to draw here. If we're going to be investing in the GID and we're going to be handing it over, it's critical that that GID...
What is the question?
My question is... I think it is a prudent idea for the district attorney to conclude that the GID is actually a legitimate functioning entity before we invest all of the stuff.
I'm still waiting for the question.
It was a statement, sorry. The point is...
The fact of the matter is that the TRI GID is debt-free. They don't owe any money. If you'd ever come to a debt management meeting here in the county, you'd know that, okay? And the clerk's office has all the documents on it. So we're at the question and answer portion of this agendized item.
Okay, let me wrap it up then. I think I've made my point with the GID, and Mr. Settlemyer is very interested in pushing through legislation at the next session to address the GID in exactly the same manner as he did up there. I think it's important to get in front of it. Finally, my last question is, we started this, and I'm sorry, Mr. McGuffey, if I'm taking too much of your time, but you're asking to commit the county for $30 million. Here's my question.
You're off track here.
So sorry. My question is this. We looked at a timeline of approving this process, and my question to you is this. Rather than allowing the decision to be put in your hands, I request, and I am asking you a question, will you instead put this on the November ballot and allow the taxpayers to decide whether this is a good idea for them or not?
It's too late.
It's not too late.
Yeah, it is too late.
So there's no way that the taxpayers can decide on it?
There's no way to put this on the ballot. It's too late for that.
Okay, well, I know that Lyon County did the same
thing
with the problem.
That was the answer.
All right,
thank you
very much, Mr. McBride. Appreciate your time, and everyone else's as well.
Ms. Bard, you're up.
This will take 3 minutes. Nicole Bard, Story County resident. In listening to this as much as anyone has, and in listening to prior, in another lifetime, presentations about economic development, residents kind of get lost in the conversation. This is about big money. This is about complex financing instruments. This is about all kinds of things, capitalization. But not once did I hear the word resident mentioned. To the extent that we do have TRI in the county, some of our residents work there, but mostly it's residents in northern Nevada, which I'm happy to have come to TRI and work. So what I'd like to do is to read a statement into the record, and I'll be done. First of all, I'd like to state that I'm in favor of the pipeline. Having worked in the semiconductor industry for 20 years, I understand fully the need for water, especially in a manufacturing facility. I might overstate that one of our factories could probably suck all of this in a year. I also understand what it takes to attract the types of high caliber companies like Tesla and Switch into a new location, and that we did that. And I'm also not opposed in principle to providing incentives to do that. So hooray for us, hooray for Nevada. What I am opposed to is the continued assault on taxpayers to pay the costs associated with operations of corporate entities who should be bearing that burden themselves. The state of Nevada have given epic abatements to these companies to get them here. They are enjoying tax relief that our small businesses enjoy, that none of our small businesses enjoy in order for them to produce their products, which we will eventually get sales taxes from. Visitors who come to town, and all of you who drove in here, are greeted with the sign proclaiming that Story County is the richest place on earth. In a recent tourism meeting, a board member announced that Story County is the wealthiest county in the United States per capita. In contrast, when I attended a community chest needs assessment meeting a couple of weeks ago, Eric Schoen, who is the executive director, provided a contrasting view. According to his presentation and based on recent statistics from communitycommons.org, Story County's median age is 54. That compares to 37 for the state as well as for the U.S. 28% of our population is 65 and older and are on fixed incomes. That compares to 14% for Nevada and also the U.S. Story County, and this is sad, has 49% of its population designated as food insecure, compared to 25% for the state and 29% for the United States, which means that after all of the hard expenses, your rent, your gas, etc., are paid, there is little left over for other necessities. 50% of our children are food insecure. Story County has 7.25% of its housing units without kitchen facilities, and this compares to about 1.93% for Nevada and about 2.8% for the U.S. Story County has little to no child care facilities accessible or affordable to its residents. We are not a rich county. We are not rich people. So when I stand up and speak against the pilfering of our tax revenues, past, present, and future, I speak out because we need those revenues to help our citizens. We've been told that we are the richest county in America. By what standard? Certainly not by the statistics I just read. We've been told that TRI would give the county and its residents so much revenue that we could expect a tax rollback. Empty promise. We are not stupid. We understand that you have to spend money to make money, and so we're waiting patiently for the abatements to cease so that we can have the revenues we need to provide more service to our residents. Now you're telling me that future revenues of the abated companies are going to pay for a pipeline that only they need and that only they will use. You want to use revenues that are needed to help feed, service, and support our own residents to build a pipeline for some of the richest companies in Nevada. What I want to say to those companies is this. The state of Nevada has given you a spectacular deal. You are enjoying great tax relief. $35 million split between the key companies is the equivalent of an ATM transaction for each of you. Be generous. Pay for it yourself. Let the good people of Story County keep our revenues so that we may better our lives. Thank you.
Thank you.